Dexter Filkins of the New York Times is one of the most respected journalists covering the war in Iraq. In a series of articles a year ago, he described the intense fighting in Fallujah, where the Marine battalion he was embedded with rooted out insurgents, getting shot at nearly every step of the way. Last spring, he won a George Polk Award for war reporting for that coverage. The award citation, which praises his riveting firsthand account of the 8-day attack, says, quote, "His courageous reports of the street-by-street fighting that killed six U.S. Marines and wounded 30 conveyed the hellish intensity of urban warfare underway in Iraq." Terry spoke to Dexter Filkins last December. He began with an excerpt from one of his pieces from Fallujah.
"The 150 Marines with whom I traveled, Bravo Company of the 1st Battalion, 8th Marines, had it as tough as any unit in the fight. They moved through the city almost entirely on foot, into the heart of the resistance, rarely protected by tanks or troop carriers, working their way through Fallujah's narrow streets with 75-pound packs on their backs. In 8 days of fighting, Bravo Company took 36 casualties, including 6 dead, meaning that the unit's men had about a 1 in 4 chance of being wounded or killed in little more than a week. The sound, sights, and feel of the battle were as old as war itself, and as new as the Pentagon's latest weapon systems. The eerie pop from the cannon of the AC-130 gunship prowling above the city at night, firing at guerrillas who are often only steps away from Americans on the ground. The weird buzz of the Dragon Eye pilotless airplane hovering over the battlefield as its video cameras beamed real-time images back to the base. The glow of the insurgents' flares throwing daylight over a landscape to help them shoot at their targets. Us. The nervous shove of a Marine scrambling for space along a brick wall as tracer rounds ricocheted above. The silence between the ping of the shell leaving its mortar tube and the explosion when it strikes. The screams of the Marines when one of their comrades, Corporal Jake Nospler, lost part of his jaw to a hand grenade. No, 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 the Marines shouted as they dragged Corporal Nospler from the darkened house where the bomb went off. It was 2 a.m., the sky dark without a moon. No, no, no. Nothing in the combat I saw even remotely resembled the scenes regularly flashed across movie screens. Even so, they often seemed no more real."
Thanks for reading that. That's Dexter Filkins of the New York Times, who's briefly out of Iraq. You mentioned the captain who you were traveling with, Captain Omohundro, and you write about him time and time again through the week. He kept his men from folding, if not by his resolute manner, then by his calmness under fire. Can you talk about how that calmness was manifested during the 8 days of fighting, and what kind of, you know, what his style of leadership was?
I should just start by saying that one of the things that struck me as a civilian and somebody who doesn't know very much about the military is just how young everybody is. I mean, it was just, most of the soldiers are 19 or 20 years old. You know, they're just, I mean, they're really just kids. You know, some of them, their voices have barely changed. And Captain Reed Omohundro was 34. He was extraordinary. I mean, he had 150 guys under his command. He's responsible for all their lives. I remember the first night we got out of the troop carriers and we're taking fire from every direction. It was pitch black. There was a unit that was supposed to be, that we were supposed to link up with. Nobody knew where they were. They apparently went off in some other direction. Basically, the whole unit was terrified. I don't think anybody had ever seen anything like this. Everybody was on the ground. I was on the ground. The explosions were going off everywhere. They were firing rocket-propelled grenades at us. And I looked up, and there was Captain Omohundro standing there, really as if he were ready to tee off, you know, on a golf ball. I mean, he was completely calm. He was talking into his radio. And as terrified, I was completely terrified, and I kind of looked up and I thought, well, you know, it was very reassuring that here's a guy, he knows what's going on here, and, you know, he has some idea of where we're supposed to be and where we're going, because, my God, nobody else does. And that happened over and over again, where scenes of extraordinary chaos, where the shooting is so loud you can't even hear, and you don't know where the bullets are coming from, and you're under attack from three different directions. And everybody, I mean, again, these are 19-year-old kids, and they're incredibly impressive, and they're very well disciplined, but it's terrifying. And the guys who were typically in charge, the platoon commanders who were usually, I think they were all about 23 or 24, and Captain Omohundro was 34, never flinched. And the result of that was the unit never flinched. And it was really, it was an extraordinary thing to witness.
You write about one of the sergeants, Sergeant Wells, who was killed in Fallujah. And it sounds from your writing that the men really admired him a lot. How was he killed?
He was killed on the first morning of the battle. It was about 7 a.m. The fighting had been going on at that point for 11 hours. We had been under fire. The sun was up. The first objective of the unit was to take a mosque that was, my gosh, it was only about 200 yards into the city, but that's how long it had taken us just to move that far. We came under fire, extraordinary fire, from two directions. As soon as we got close to the mosque, the insurgents opened up, and then the Marines opened up, and it was this incredible gun battle that it just went on and on and on. Couldn't hear, couldn't see. Right in the middle of this, one of the lieutenants, or Captain Omohundro, gave the order to take the mosque. And one of the platoons, of which Sergeant Wells was a member, I think it was the second platoon, ran across the street, into the street, and up the street towards the mosque. They ran right into interlocking machine gun fire. And I think 40 guys ran across that road. And by the time that platoon got to the other side of the road, there were five Marines lying in the road. One of them was Sergeant Wells. He bled to death in the middle of the road. The amazing thing, and this happened time again almost every day, was Marines would go down wounded, shot, or dead in just really a storm of gunfire, and other Marines would turn and run into the fire to get their buddies out, and it just didn't matter what was being thrown at them. And that's what happened in this case. There were five Marines lying in the road, all of them shot, bleeding. Sergeant Wells was still alive. He'd been hit in the leg. He was bleeding profusely. And one guy after another ran into the road to pull him out. They didn't get Sergeant Wells out in time, and he bled to death shortly afterwards. The other four that got out. He was a senior. Sergeant Wells was a kind of senior guy in the platoon, which I think meant that he was about 27 or something. But he had kind of taken a bunch of the younger guys under his wing, and he'd written letters to their parents saying, "Look, we're going to go into battle, and I'm going to look after these guys, and they're all good kids, and you don't have anything to worry about." And so everybody was really close to him, and were pretty shaken when he died.
Did you have conversations with the Marines that you traveled with about death and their fears of death? If they allowed themselves to think about that?
That's a very good question. In the barracks before the big fight started, I was with one platoon. It was about 50 guys. We were all, sleeping on these cots, and again, they're all 19 and 20 years old, and it felt like a high school football team before the big game. And everybody, they were definitely nervous, but they didn't sit around and talk about death and what if I die and oh my God, I'm so terrified. It was more kind of a lot of joking and kind of towel popping than anything. But and the strange thing was, they were definitely nervous. I mean, you could tell. But we went into battle, and a lot of Marines were wounded and killed, and they continued. I should say, I think in the first week, that unit, Bravo Company, took 36 casualties out of 150 guys, and I left. And after I left, they continued to take casualties. But the really unusual thing was that they didn't talk about it very much, almost at all, when one of their comrades went down. And unless under, great prodding from somebody like me, when the fighting was over. And I tried to talk to him about that. I noticed immediately that when one of their buddies and, obviously a good friend was killed or wounded and taken away, why wasn't everybody standing around sobbing about it? And the answer, and I guess it's an obvious answer, was that, that's a luxury that we can't afford right now. And typically the answer was, I'll deal with it when I get home. And there's a time for mourning, but that time is not right now, because if we all sit around here and start sobbing about our dead friends, then we're not going to be able to get anything done. It's a very good answer, and it's probably the only answer, but it's an odd thing to witness, and you can tell, you can just imagine the strain that they're all under and what they're holding back and what inevitably is going to come out when they get home.
Dexter Filgums is a Baghdad correspondent for the New York Times. He spoke with Terry last December.